ranked far more than 1916 or Georgian buildings. And now a new book is addressing the sorts of history that ordinary residents of the city have experienced. The book is called Come Here to Me, and in the studio is one of the authors, Donal Fallon. Donal, good afternoon.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Nice to have you back again. Did this start as a blog?
Yeah, well, I hate the word blog. I think you hear a blog, you think of a whinge on the internet.
Yeah.
I would say it started as a website.
Yes.
3 years ago, Come Here to Me was born. Three lads in our 20s with a love of Dublin history realised it was a pretty easy time to write history because you didn't have to go to a library anymore and dig through old newspapers. Everything's been digitised.
Hmm.
And we thought that there was an opportunity to launch a sort of Dublin from below sort of history website.
Yeah.
And like I say, like everyone knows the grand narrative. Hmm. You know, everyone knows about 1798 and 1916, the War of Independence. We wanted to get into the really odd stuff. We wanted to find the real gems in there. We wanted to find things as obscure as what was the first gay bar in Dublin?
Mm.
You know, where were the first telephone lights in Dublin? All these little odd little bits of history that were there. Very light-hearted stuff, but also some very serious stuff.
Yeah, but a lot of that is cultural stuff, and a lot of that is stuff that people would have talked about at the time.
Oh, yeah.
As much as they would have whatever the big political themes
were. Oh, yeah, yeah, no, it absolutely is.
What was the first gay? Was it Rices?
It was the Viking, which
right.
Today is known as Brogans.
Right.
Right next to the Olympia.
Yeah.
The Viking was number one. But, I mean, these sort of tidbits, little things like that, but also more serious stuff. One thing we all hated, tree history students, one thing we always hated was this idea of the rare old times.
Hmm.
And this awful line, there's something really Irish about it. We were poor, but we were happy.
Yes.
I hate that.
Yeah, well, we're poor now. I don't see any smiling going on.
You're not happy, but. So we've also looked at stuff like, I was on with you last year, looking at the animal gangs, 1930s. The slums, and well into the 50s and the 60s, even places like Mount Pleasant. We've done a lot of research on very serious stuff and very light-hearted stuff, and eventually decided that what we wanted to do was release a book out of all this.
Hmm.
So 3 years in the making, we finally cut it down to just under 70 stories, and they range from the very funny and surreal to the very tragic.
And what kind of time range?
Well, we go all the way back to the 18th century Dublin, but you go right up to the 1980s.
Mm.
Like I say, the article, one of my favourite articles in the book is called No Sex Shops, Please, We're Irish.
Yes.
And it's about the opposition to the earliest adult shops in Dublin, which isn't in the 1970s or the 1980s. Incredibly, that's the 1990s.
Yeah.
The first one in the Republic opened in 1991 in Bray, Utopia.
Right.
And Dublin got its first in 1993. Jim Bellamy opened it. You know.
And that was the one on
page. Utopia was born, and it remained a great Dublin story. But it did, I mean, these shops were picketed. They were threatened. One shop received a bullet in the post.
Mm.
In an interview we'd done with a journalist called Sean Moncrief in the Irish Times in 1993,
yeah.
Bellamy said, you know, the moral compass of this country is being set by priests, old men and judges. There was an incredible level of opposition. And that's a part of social history as well, you know.
Mm.
That stuff is important. Some of the other stories are quite funny. Vladimir Lenin famously spoke English with a Dublin accent.
Yeah, well, I think that has come up before. Why is that?
We put that one out there and it flew. It went completely viral. The story is Roddy Connolly. He was the son of James Connolly.
Yeah.
Roddy was in the GPO in 1916, I think as a 15-year-old. Went to Soviet Russia and met Lenin. And said afterwards that Lenin spoke with this peculiarly Dublin accent. The story is, in most biographies of Lenin, that when in London, he advertises, he puts an ad in the paper saying, if you can teach me English, I can teach you Russian.
Mm.
And the Russians have tended to believe that it was a Scottishman who taught him English, but Roddy Connolly insisted that it was a Dublin twang. And not only a Dublin twang, it was what he called a rap minds.
Yeah, what is a Rat Minds accent?
Have you ever seen The Play on the Stars, Sean O'Casey, the woman at the end, the Rat Minds accent?
But, right, okay.
Hero of the Russian Revolution with a Dublin bourgeoisie accent.
Also, interestingly, because this is one of these things that actually does fascinate Irish people as to what others think of it, but you look at 1940s guidebooks to Dublin.
They're shocking stuff. One from England, one from the United States. They tell you, one thing they tell you is when you're in Dublin, do not talk about communism. They say it's genuinely unsafe to talk about communism in Dublin, and do not question the Catholic faith.
Right.
And these are guidebooks written for tourists. And both of them, both ones, we look at two in the book, both of them allude to a serious alcohol problem among the masses. They're incredible. They're real insight into how others saw us in the 1940s.
The communism one is interesting. You can obviously understand the Catholicism thing. Mm. Which I wouldn't have thought that anti-communism was so rife that people were that scared of it.
One thing in the book that's really, really frightening is the level of anti-communist violence in Dublin in the 1930s, the 1940s. Mm. Connolly House, which was the home of the Communist Party at the time, named after James Connolly, burnt down by a mob in 1934. The Jesuit priest up in the Pro Cathedral told them that in Dublin, you know, the devils of communism were in our midst, and they marched down and burnt it to the ground.
Yeah.
So some of those stories are pretty shocking, pretty harrowing stuff.
There's also some interesting stories about before Nelson's Column was blown up, alternative plans for us.
Well, Nelson was a protected structure, and taking them down was a problem. So the compromise various groups came forward with was, how about we leave the pillar and we put someone else up there?
Hmm.
Now, various campaign groups were formed. One group in the 20s said that the Virgin Mary should go on top of the pillar. Good,
yes,
inclusive idea.
Yeah.
That didn't fly. St. Patrick was then proposed. Jim Larkin at one stage was proposed before Larkin stood on O'Connell Street himself. My favourite was in 65, a group of Irish Americans said, you know who'd be perfect up there? John F. Kennedy.
Mm.
And they began lobbying to have JFK put on top of the pillar. The pillar has a great hidden history in it. You could write a book on Nelson's pillar itself, but there's a good chunk on the pillar in there.
And you'd wonder, just prior to it being blown up, was there, you know, had they come to any sort of conclusion as to what should go up there?
One group wanted to remove the whole thing to the Hill of Hoat. They said it was too controversial on O'Connell Street, and that it should be moved bit by bit to the Hill of Hoat. But of course, in the end, it was a private sector removal.
It was, yes. It was removed to nowhere, really. The first, and what's very interesting about this book, there's kind of loads of little, if you like, the starts of recognisable Dublin in things like drug use and Rockfest. What was the first Rockfestival in Ireland?
Well, everyone thinks of the great gigs in Dublin, you think of like Bob Marley in Dellyman Park.
Hmm.
And, you know, if everyone who was actually at Bob Marley in Dellyman Park was there, it would have had to be in Croke Park. You'd have so many people. The first rock festival in Dublin happened in another League of Ireland stadium. And I'm a Pats fan. I'm pretty proud of the fact it happened in Richmond Park in 1970 in Inchicore. But it was a massive thing in the media. Tin Lizzy played it. And it was headlined by Mungo Jerry.
Yeah, I remember Mungo Jerry. I saw them once playing Castle Bar, of all places.
But the media had a field day with this one. The Irish press ran a front page, lunatic fringe elements set to descend on Inchicore. The St. Pat's board had to distance themselves from the entire thing. In the end, I think they sold about 15% of the tickets. One teenager told a journalist as he was leaving that he'd been to better wakes. It was a total catastrophe. It was all a scare story around drugs, just stopped people from allowing their kids to go at the time.
I knew this would be, this is so interesting, it's got to be controversial. Somebody's texting in to say Rice's or Bartley Dunn's were gay bars before the Viking.
Yeah, well, the lad who done the research on that one, these all came up as potentials, but when looking at the discussions on gay blogs and gay history blogs, we think in the end that the Viking is the best one. Though we do have a question mark over that in the book.
Right, okay, yes.
The Viking, Dublin's first gay bar, question mark.
Yeah, because how would you, and especially in Dublin at that time, how would you, you know, the bar isn't going to stick a sign on the door saying we're a gay bar.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. But there was a whole gay community in Dublin, the Hirschfield Centre and other things like that.
Indeed. And you do have a look at drug use in Dublin, and I suppose this is before it became a huge issue or became publicly...
Or recreational stuff in the 60s. Really, as much as being an article about drug use, it's an article about media attitudes to drugs and scaremongering. So many of the articles in the book really look at media perception of things historically, and that's one. The media coverage of drugs in the 60s is fascinating stuff.
The book is called Come Here to Me. Donal Fallon is one of the three authors of that. It's Dublin's Come Here to Me, Dublin's Other History. Donal, thanks a million for coming into us today. We're going to take a break back in a couple of minutes.